From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Alligator hunting in North Carolina is now legal after a more than 40-year ban. Last October, the North Carolina Wildlife Commission updated its alligator management plan and defined a potential hunting season from September 1st to October 1st. Hunting is only allowed in designated counties, and municipalities within those counties must apply for permits before hunting can commence. So far, only one town has applied, Lake Waccamaw. Belleville in Brunswick County went so far as to ban alligator hunting. Officials there say they want to remain an alligator sanctuary. The State Wildlife Commission also updated its coyote management plan earlier this year. On today's Coastline, we'll learn about the changes to these two management plans. We'll also hear why two state officials say it's critically important that residents learn to peacefully coexist with wild animals since they're here to stay. With us today, Chris Kent. He's a wildlife biologist with the North Carolina Wildlife Commission in District 2, which includes 12 southeastern counties, including New Hanover, Pender, Duplin, and Onslow counties. He has also served as the hunter education specialist for the southeastern region. Chris Kent, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel. It's good to be here.
Good to have you here. I'm also very glad to have with us John Henry Harrelson, a wildlife biologist with the North Carolina Wildlife Commission in District 4, which covers 9 other counties, including Brunswick and Columbus. Before that, he served as the technical assistance biologist for coastal North Carolina. John Henry Harrelson, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rachel. It's good to be here.
Good to have you here. And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Are you concerned about the alligators in your neighborhood? Have you seen coyotes around? What about other forms of wildlife? Are there wild animals you see on a daily basis that you want to know more about? Tell us about what you're seeing out the back window. You can call us during this live Wednesday discussion at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Chris Kent, why an alligator hunting season after so many years of that being illegal in North Carolina?
Well, we identified several reasons in our alligator management plan that was just released. And one of the reasons that we identified was, you know, the need to protect public safety. Typically, alligators are shy animals. They don't want to have anything to do with humans. The important thing to remember is if people don't feed them, they'll be shy and secretive and not really want to approach people. When people start feeding them, they quickly lose their fear of people. They'll begin approaching people at boat ramps, you know, public parks and things like that. So, you know, the commission identified this as a way for municipalities, cities, towns, et cetera, to protect public safety. If they identify in that particular area that their alligator population, you know, has increased to the point where there's more contact with humans and those areas to protect public safety, you know, we had to have that as another option for management. And that's why that was passed.
John Henry Harrelson, is it still the case that Lake Waccamaw is the only municipality that has applied at this point?
So actually, Lake Waccamaw hasn't fully submitted their request for alligator hunting season. Their county commissioners voted to, I guess, look into the matter and send an initial letter, but based off a meeting that we've had recently, I guess they're still deciding, they're still making up their mind whether they're going to formally request. But outside of District 4, there has not been any other interest voice to our agency about
and
a hunt.
Nothing in District 2 so far, Chris Kent?
No applications that I know of.
Are you hearing murmurings of municipalities that might apply?
We've been contacted by some municipalities that really just wanted clarification on what it would entail. Some municipalities that contacted us were, I guess you could say, a little fearful about turning the public loose to hunt within, you know, the township or the municipality boundaries. And they really wanted a biologist to come and talk to them to explain the parameters of it. And, you know, in those meetings, you know, we walked away, they felt like they understood a lot better. When a town or municipality submits their application for a limited take population reduction hunt. You know, the actual town and municipality can identify restrictions or parameters. You know, they could say, you know, only on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays during this time period, or only in this particular area within the town limits would the hunting be allowed. And just because a town or municipality applies, it doesn't mean that there is going to be a hunt. Biologists from our agency would certainly make site visits, meet with town officials. We would actually do a survey of the population in that area. So it's not a guarantee that a permit would even be issued. But say one or two permits did get issued because the alligator population was viable enough to allow that. Then that would be administered through our agency as a permit lottery draw type system.
And so, John Henry Harrelson, help us understand this process. Let's say that a permit is granted to a particular municipality. Take us through this hypothetical situation. I'm then a resident who lives in that municipality, and I want to hunt an alligator. Do I then apply to the town?
No, you would apply to our agency. We have a lottery system online that you submit your hunting license number, et cetera, to, and you pay $5. It's a $5 fee to apply for a permit, just like all our other permits that we have, you know, deer, turkey, duck hunting permits on our game lands. It would go into that same system, and then it would be randomly drawn. So from what we're hearing right now, it would be July or around the time that if a hunt was going to take place this year, that those permits they'd be advertised that they're available, and then the application period would last 6-7 weeks, and then those permit holders or those people would be notified if they were drawn.
And so the town or city has to apply to you guys first, just so that you can do a survey of the population and see what you're dealing with there and whether or not this is a good idea to hunt alligators. And then the municipality, if you grant that permit to that municipality, then people within that municipality,
anyone can apply,
are going to be governed by town restrictions and North Carolina Wildlife Commission parameters.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
What are town leaders worried about? What are some of the concerns that you've heard expressed about people hunting within city limits or town limits?
Personally, I think, you know, people are concerned with the use of firearms within city limits or town limits, especially using a firearm around water. You know, there's a possibility of a bullet ricocheting off the water or something like that. But, you know, in our alligator management plan, you know, it's clearly identified, you know, how the animal would be restrained and brought in to close proximity before it was humanely euthanized. And, you know, there will be no high-powered rifles shooting across water, et cetera. That's clearly defined in the management plan. So, once we explain that to town officials, they feel a little more comfortable about that. And also that, you know, when they apply to us, they can apply for whatever restrictions they want to add on to that.
We have a question from Brian from Wilmington says, I would like you guys to speak on the underlying cause of the increased frequency of contact. Could it be the huge spike in unchecked development this area has seen in the past few years? Have we finally built so many apartments that the solution is to hunt the wildlife we have displaced? What, if any, conservation efforts are being looked at to preserve our natural beauty and biodiversity? John Henry Harrelson, have we encroached so much that that's really the cause of more human-alligator interactions here?
Well, habitat loss is the number one reason for number one problem for wildlife all across the world. And so it's the same for alligators. I mean, every time we build a house, a new housing development, people go in and dig these retention ponds so they can put soil either to build up the lots or build up the road. And they are creating perfect alligator habitat, shallow ponds with mowed banks for them to be able to get out and swim on or lay on. They often stock these ponds. There's turtles in these ponds, and they're all connected together. So we really are creating we're creating problems every time we expand. And there is conservation efforts. Part of our management plan for alligators is to address habitat. And to address specific locations where we can conserve habitat dealing with alligators. But in general for wildlife, we partner with other agencies and have our own lands, our game lands that we manage for wildlife and manage for habitat.
In a resolution passed by the town of Belleville, as you know, leaders basically said no hunting in the town of Belleville. We want this to be an alligator sanctuary. According to a piece that was published in the News and Observer, town leaders said they're concerned hunting female alligators could lead to a decline in the overall gator population. Are there concerns warranted? Is there a lot that we really don't understand about how alligators live and breed in southeastern North Carolina? Chris Kent?
Absolutely. We have a lot to learn about alligators, and that was another component identified in our alligator management plan, is the need for more research to be conducted. We started with alligator surveys last summer down in Brunswick and Columbus County areas. We've started a mark recapture study with alligators across the state, so any alligators that we handle, we install like a microchip type tag that, you know, should we handle that animal again in the future, we will know, you know, where it was captured, where it was released, how far it's traveled, whether it was a male or female, how much it's grown in that time. So, and we've definitely, as a public wildlife agency, we've identified the need for more education and more research to be done. And
why has there been so little research up to now? Because we know that in Florida, for instance, people have been living with alligators for decades. And you'll be able to answer that question when we come back from this break. Okay. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. We're taking a closer look at the critters that inhabit southeastern North Carolina, including alligators, and why North Carolina Wildlife Commission officials are suddenly fielding more questions and concerns than ever. When we come back from this break, we'll take a question from Ruth from Wilmington. How do you feel when you see a gator in a nearby retention pond? Is it a public safety issue? Are you fascinated? Give us a call during this live Wednesday discussion, 910-343-1138, or email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. This year marks the first time in more than 40 years that North Carolinians could be allowed to hunt alligators in designated municipalities between September 1st and October 1st. Today, we're learning what biologists know about the population in North Carolina and what remains to be understood. Answering your questions on this Wednesday are two wildlife biologists with the North Carolina Wildlife Commission. Chris Kent of District 2 and John Henry Harrelson of District 4 are with us. Both of these regions cover southeastern North Carolina. What questions do you have about animals you've seen in the region? You can call us on this Wednesday and tell us about it at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Just before we went to break, Chris Kent, I was asking you why biologists seem to know a great deal more about how alligators breed and live and how to manage a population in, say, Florida. What's the difference, and why do we know so little about them in North Carolina? Why wouldn't it just be the same thing?
Well, that's a good question. I wouldn't say that we know so little, but we have certainly identified the need for more data to be collected and more research to be done on alligators. You know, Florida, as you mentioned, is a very common thing down in Florida to have alligators in people's backyards and ponds, et cetera. In North Carolina, something important to point out is the northernmost range for the American alligators. So, you know, we're the top of their range right now. So we have less alligators than Florida has and other southern states. They don't breed as often or as much. They don't grow as fast in North Carolina. You know, and why the big push right now? You know, on one hand, I would say biologists for our agency here on the coast have been, you know, dealing with alligator issues and residents of eastern North Carolina for many, many years. It's just, you know, with the release of our alligator management plan and the alligator task force that was created, there's been a lot more talk about it, I think.
You extended the deadline
for the potential for the application for the alligator hunting season this year. You extended it to June 1st.
Yes, ma'am.
Because no one applied. That sounds like you're encouraging people to hunt. Are you doing that?
Well, that's one thing I wanted to point out. You know, the North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission, we're not encouraging this. We're not promoting this, you know, and hoping that municipalities are going to apply. But we needed to have this as a tool in the toolbox should a town or municipality feel that the number of confrontations between humans and alligators, the number of complaints they're receiving, you know, things like that warranted a population reduction hunt. So we just needed this as another tool in the toolbox. If a municipality or town feels the need to apply, then absolutely they can apply.
We're going to get into peaceful coexistence in a little while, because I know that's a big part of your educational outreach effort. But first of all, would you be a little sad if people did hunt alligators and there was a lot of hunting going on? I'm asking for an emotional response here. I don't know if as state officials you can do that. But
we have hunting seasons for many animals and trapping seasons for many animals. And, you know, as a state wildlife agency, you know, hunting and trapping is a very important tool for managing wildlife populations. And, you know, as was mentioned earlier about, you know, coyotes moving into North Carolina, a big reason for that is the apex predators were removed from the landscape. And so, you know, large bears, wolves, cougars, things like that that normally would have preyed on coyotes aren't here anymore. So humans, it falls on humans to manage populations of animals like that through hunting and trapping. So it is a very important, you know, tool in the toolbox.
So then where do alligators fall into that hierarchy in the ecosystem? They're not apex predators, John Henry Harrelson?
Oh, they're definitely apex predators okay. In the water.
Okay.
For sure.
And I don't want to embarrass you, but this is about peaceful coexistence. And somebody in this room, and it wasn't me, compared alligators to big puppies in the water. And I have to say, whoever happened to say that, I love you for that. You're speaking my language. Every animal I see looks like a puppy to me. But most people don't feel that way, John Henry Harrelson. Well, tell us about that comparison. Why is that valid?
Well, they're big puppies with lots of teeth and a lot of force that could hurt you if you try to catch them. But an alligator, for the most part, doesn't want anything to do with people. And it just, you know, if you approach an alligator on the bank, it swims off and it turns around, looks at you. And when I compared it to a puppy dog in the water, it's more of the curiosity that an alligator has. A lot of times when an alligator comes up to a person, it's just checking out what's going on. It's interested in what you're doing in its house, in its habitat. You know, when you put a kayak in, and it's like, oh, what's this 8-foot, 9-foot thing going in the water? This could be something I should take note of. And it's just sizing things up. You know, it's not out to hurt you. It's not out to bite you, to harm you. It's just being an alligator.
That's a good point. I just wanted to add to that. Yeah. You know, education is such an important part of what we do, Rachel. And, you know, teaching people how to coexist with wildlife, you know, number one, first and foremost, is that, you know, folks need to take a step back and use common sense. You know, as John Henry mentioned, they are an apex predator in the environment. They do a lot of good things managing muskrats, beavers, nutria populations, you know, of wildlife nuisance type animals that can do a lot of damage to property, et cetera. But, you know, people need to use common sense around any wild animal. It doesn't matter if it's a squirrel, a raccoon, a fox, an alligator, a bear, or a coyote. You know, so don't feed the animals. That's first and foremost. You know, people that feed wildlife like alligators can create a lot of problems for other people.
And when the people are feeding them, they probably have no idea what they're actually doing.
That's typically the case. Yeah, it is against the law in North Carolina to feed alligators or harass alligators.
And now, just to be really obvious, Captain Obvious here, take us through the scenario. Someone starts feeding an alligator that they see in their nearby retention pond. The alligator starts to come to see them every day to get the cheeseburger or whatever it is. But take us through what will eventually happen.
Yeah, that's a good point to make. It does not take long for an animal like an alligator to lose its fear of people and begin associating that person with food or people in general with an easy food handout. And, you know, you have to remember, wild animals, they don't know when their next meal is coming. and they have to, you know, hunt and they have to search hard for their food. And if they're getting free handouts, hey, that's great. You know, what animal wouldn't turn that down? But what if the next person that comes along is a child or an elderly person or something like that, and the alligator swims right up to them trying to get a free food handout? So you can see where eventually it could lead to problems. We want to keep these animals wild. We want to maintain a healthy respect and fear of humans.
And when they start to obviously lose their fear of humans, that's when they become endangered. Right. I mean, it's at that point, John Henry Harrelson, that someone could call and say, hey, there's an alligator that's coming right up to people in our neighborhood. And what would you would that be cause to come and get him?
That would be cause for us to do some further investigation into what's going on there. So it would likely result in us having a site visit, asking a lot more questions. And depending on the situation, it may result in us issuing a depredation permit to have the alligator relocated and moved out of that subdivision if we deem that it's necessary for the safety of people.
Or the alligator.
Or the alligator.
And the depredation permit, will that always be about relocation? Does he always wind up in Holly Shelter, or does he sometimes wind up in as a shoe or a purse?
No, we do not give permits for euthanasia unless it's in extreme cases. And in the few years I've been here, or at least a year in this position, we have not issued a permit for euthanasia. It would have to be in a very extreme case for us not to relocate an alligator. And there's always the option for us to potentially relocate it into captivity or into some other situations where it doesn't have to die.
You make a really good point, Rachel, in that, you know, not every alligator needs to be relocated. And to be frank, you know, the development and habitat loss issue that came up earlier, you know, the fact of the matter remains there's fewer and fewer places along our coast that are vast expanses of swamps where alligators can be taken to. Hence, you know, the need for public education and to teach people about coexistence. They're going to be here. We're going to be here. We have to, you know, figure out how to be safe around them and to coexist with them.
And sometimes moving an alligator is going to cause more problems than it's going to solve, especially when you move a larger alligator, because you're removing this threat, that void there, and you're creating some open habitat for a bunch of smaller alligators to move in. So you could be moving an 8-foot alligator, and then you result in 3 6-foot alligators, you know.
So it's sort of like deadheading a rose bush. You take off the head of the dead head, and then suddenly all these little buds pop up. Is that a reasonable comparison?
I'd say so.
Is that part of what we don't understand about how alligators breed and grow in this particular part of the country? Do we know how to manage a population, like whether you should kill or take that large alpha male, or whether you should be taking 4 smaller alligators? Chris Kent?
Well, I think something important to make a point on with that is that, you know, an alligator to be sexually mature of age and size to even be able to breed, you know, would be somewhere in between 12 and perhaps 16 years old, you know, average around 15. That's roughly about a 6-foot long animal. So we get calls a lot of time about, you know, a pair of alligators, a mating pair, or a mother and a young alligator, and we show up and they're 4 feet long and 3 feet long. You know, those are very young animals. They can live, you know, up to 50 plus years. So if you see a 6-foot long or larger animal, then more than likely that's a sexually mature animal that could be of breeding age. As far as management of the population, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we are the northernmost range for the American alligator. And so, yeah, as a state wildlife agency, that's a very important point for us to remember. You know, if a hunting season were to be opened up and anyone could go and hunt alligators, it wouldn't take long for, you know, the population to be reduced. Most hunters might want to target larger animals, and if too many larger animals were removed from the population, you know, you can really make a big dent in the breeding population of the animals. So
we had a question from Ruth from Wilmington. She says, alligators in Florida were almost hunted to extinction. Conservation efforts helped to save them. I understand reasons for hunting them if their population gets too large, but I want to reiterate, To feed an alligator is to kill an alligator. Thank you for that, Ruth.
That's a good point.
Yep. And I'll just make another point on what Chris was talking about there. You know, these first 3 years of potential alligator harvest are designated to target problem animals and problem situations. It's not region-wide alligator hunting. And before that will be, or if in the plan it says before we will allow that, that there will be enough research conducted to allow us to have the knowledge that there is a viable population of alligators. It is growing. It can sustain some amount of harvest. But before statewide alligator season happens, that research has to be conducted first.
Richard from Rocky Point called in and said, I want clarification on something on your website says, now for Pender and Onslow counties, they can apply for the season. He wants a direct answer if there will be a hunting season or not. What will happen after June 1st? Chris Kent.
Well, since that's in my district, I'll answer that. currently it's not on a countywide level, so a town or municipality within those two counties would have to identify a need for a population reduction hunt and apply to our agency. If no towns or municipalities apply by that expiration date, then there would be no season in those particular counties this year.
Getting back to peaceful coexistence, really want to explore this because it certainly happens a lot in Brunswick County. We see pictures on social media all the time of large and small alligators in retention ponds or sunning themselves near retention ponds in these subdivisions. Some people respond with, yuck, keep your kids and your cats and your dogs inside. And other people respond with, how cool. So we know that feeding them is a really bad idea for everybody, including the alligator. What about feeding the turtles that also live in the retention pond, or the fish, the carp who live in the retention ponds? Is that okay?
I'll take that, or you can take it.
Well, Brunswick County's bad, so
okay,
I'll take it.
Ahead.
I'd say
yeah.
Feeding of any of those species is going to cause a congregation of easily available prey, and that would probably be a negative. You know, if you got 50 turtles there all snapping at the water and you have a 5-foot alligator, he's going to come up there and eat a turtle. He's going to make quick haste to that. And as far as people seeing alligators in retention ponds and having those different reactions, I think people should realize that alligators are essentially living dinosaurs. They've been in this area for thousands and thousands of years, and unless we move them all, they're going to be here for the foreseeable future. And our agency, and I know Chris and I, we just want to protect and conserve alligators and make sure that they remain wild like they're supposed to.
Now, again, just talking about people in the general public who see these guys in their subdivisions, it's easy to walk by a large retention pond where there's a sidewalk and say, oh, interesting, and keep moving. But what about when the retention pond is adjacent to someone's property and they have, say, a 4 or 5 foot gator in there? Is that suddenly a serious danger to their dog who's running around in the fenced in backyard? Or what would you say to property owners who are right next to them, literally?
Well, you made a good statement there. You said a fenced-in backyard. So an alligator isn't going to climb a fence to get in the backyard to eat your dog. However, if you have your open property right up next to the water and you keep your bushes cut down, the grass nice and mowed, you're creating a great sunning habitat. And I'd say I'd be concerned for my dog, and I'd also be concerned for small kids and anybody who is frail or could fall or be seen as potential prey. You know, this is especially the bigger alligators. I mean, they're apex predators. They're larger than us, and that's something that should be considered. But you have to respect wildlife. You have to respect the animal. You know, he's lived there or he's living there. And a lot of times, as long as you stay on your side, he's going to stay on his side. He really doesn't want anything to do with you as long as you don't all of a sudden become a food source for him.
How many cases are there in North Carolina of alligators attacking people?
So I'll say from what I know, there hasn't been a case where someone hasn't been trying to catch the alligator that has been bitten.
There is not a documented case of someone who has been leaving an alligator alone and the alligator came racing after him to eat him. That hasn't happened.
I don't know of any.
Yeah, not that it's been reported to us. I think Chris was saying there's been three cases of alligator bites, and they all revolved around folks attempting to capture the alligator, handle the alligator.
Or feed the alligator.
Or feed the alligator. I would say do not try to catch an alligator. You see it on TV. They are incredibly fast. They have incredibly powerful jaws and hundreds of teeth in their mouth that are just meant to pretty much rip your arm, your flesh off, and eat you.
And so those pictures that we see online of golfers missing hands, or are those real, or are those Photoshopped things? I mean, that's not really the way it goes.
Not in North Carolina.
Yeah. No. And we are going to get to coyotes because this is also a management plan that you recently updated. Can you tell us the reason why, briefly, that you needed to update this plan? Chris Kent.
Sure. Yeah, the coyote is not native to North Carolina. It's actually native to the Midwest, Great Plains area. They first moved into North Carolina probably early 80s, we'll say, in the western part of the state. They're now found in all 100 counties and even on the islands of the Outer Banks, et cetera. So, you know, being that they're a non-native species, they are a predatory animal. You know, our agency, we saw the need to, you know, fill in any gaps that we may have had with previous management plans, et cetera. And really, we've tried to lift all hurdles and restrictions for people to manage coyotes on their own property. Yeah, people can take coyotes 365 days a year with the use of firearms or archery equipment on their property day or night. They can use electronic calls. There's a few tighter restrictions up in the northeastern part of our state where the Fish and Wildlife Service have reintroduced the eastern red wolf up there. But, you know, other than that, you know, we try anything we can do to help people manage coyotes on their own property.
And we're going to explore more about that when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. It's an exploration of the wild animals, particularly alligators and coyotes, living in and around southeastern North Carolina. We have two wildlife biologists with us from the North Carolina Wildlife Commission, and they're answering your questions on this Wednesday. When we come back from this break, you'll have just a few minutes left to get your question or comment in, 910-343-1138 or coastline at whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today we're learning about the wild animals that inhabit the Cape Fear region and how the State Wildlife Commission is working not only to manage these populations but also help people coexist peacefully with these animals. John Henry Harrelson is a wildlife biologist from District 4, which includes Brunswick, Columbus, and Robeson counties. Chris Kent covers the adjacent District 2, which includes New Hanover, Pender, and Onslow counties. And they're answering your questions on this Wednesday. You can give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. This is the last segment, so just a few more minutes to get your question in. And we were talking about the updated coyote management plan, how coyotes are now in all 100 counties in North Carolina. Are they becoming a threat to people, or are they a pest? Chris Kent?
Well, as I mentioned before the break, you know, they are an invasive species in North Carolina. And though they don't get very large, typically only 20 to 40 pounds, you know, your cat or small dog, you know, does not look any different than a raccoon or a rabbit or something like that that would be typical prey for a coyote. So, you know, people, you know, look to the State Wildlife Agency to fix all the problems. And, you know, with an animal like a coyote, you know, the word eradication and coyote typically shouldn't be used in the same sentence.
Why?
It's a very difficult animal to manage for. You know, the pups that are born in the springtime are about full grown and dispersing in the fall to go and establish their own home range and begin breeding in the first year even. They can have as many as, you know, 4 to 6 pups in a litter, sometimes even up to 13. You know, if you look at all the western states, you know, Nevada, California, New Mexico, a lot of those western states that have had all-out assault on coyotes over the years and have literally spent billions of dollars with a bee, every single one of those western states still has coyotes. So they can disperse great distances, up to 200 to 300 miles. They can eat just about anything, including watermelons. They actually love watermelons. You know, and so it's a very difficult animal to manage. And so that's why we wanted, as a state wildlife agency, to lift all hurdles and restrictions and allow people to manage coyotes on their property.
So do people have to apply for a permit if they start noticing a coyote around their property, or can they just go ahead and take them out?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, 365 days a year, people can take coyotes on their property with a firearm or archery equipment. However, if you're within any city limits, there might be restrictions on the use of a firearm. So I would strongly encourage the people to contact their local sheriff's department or police department and confirm whether a firearm can be discharged legally on their property. But trapping is also a very effective tool at managing coyote populations. One thing that John Henry and I do, and other biologists across the state, we teach free coyote management workshops in the summertime typically. These are free workshops across the state. People can find more information on our website, attend one of these workshops, and we teach them, you know, not just lethal means of removal, but also non-lethal means of removal, education, things you can do around your property to make it less appealing to coyotes and other animals like
that.
What
are some of those things that you could do?
Absolutely. And feel free to chime in anytime you want to,
John Henry. Feel free. Yeah.
I'll let you answer.
I'd say removing a food source is usually the first thing you want to do, whether that be removing your trash, you know, bringing your trash in so it can't access it, taking down your bird feeders, removing pet food off the back porch.
Coyotes will eat bird seed?
Coyotes will eat anything they can get their mouths on, but they do eat bird seed. But also, that bird seed represents a potential food source for songbirds, for squirrels, for other stuff up there eating it, rodents at night. They're, you know, living in your yard that you don't know about. And then also removing pet food that you, if you feed your dogs outside, and removing uneaten pet food, you know, not throwing food scraps out in your backyard. Usually a wildlife problem revolves around easy food. And we try to remove that easy food situation, and then in turn we relieve that problem most of the time.
Is there any issue if you do happen to see a coyote on the perimeter of your property? Can you just let him be there, not bother him knowing he'll go away, or is that a dangerous situation?
It depends on if you want the coyote on your property or not. A lot of people love wildlife in our state, and you know, they enjoy seeing animals around their property. I'm included. My property backs up to a national forest. I have alligators and bears and foxes and coyotes in my backyard periodically. I love to watch them. Some people don't want animals that close to their property. And so it depends on what your comfort level is with wildlife.
At what point do they become an actual danger to a human?
I'd say when they're coming approaching you, that's when they become an issue. You know, seeing a coyote in your yard, that's nothing to be concerned of. He could just be walking through and you just happen to see him. And we have a lot of wildlife that lives in subdivisions and neighborhoods that do not get seen. Coyotes, foxes, bobcats, all those critters live around us all the time. They're just all secretive and do a really good job of hiding from us. But occasionally, you know, they losing their fear of people, and we tend to see them more often. But when a person should be concerned is when you walk out and a coyote doesn't run away from you, it starts coming towards you. At that point, that's something you should be concerned about and contact us or contact animal control or enforcement officer or someone that can point you in the right direction.
Is it likely at that point that he's rabid or has some kind of disease? Because why otherwise would a coyote approach a human who obviously is not going to be prey for that coyote, or are they?
Looking for an easy food source, as John Henry mentioned, the vast majority of calls that we get from folks that are having wildlife nuisance issues on or around their property involve an easy food source, and that's attracting the animals. But an important point to make is, you know, any of these animals, foxes, raccoons, opossums, skunks, coyotes, you can see any of these animals during the daytime, at nighttime, any time of the day. If you see one during the day, it doesn't mean it has rabies. So, you know, a big part of our job is disease surveillance in wildlife populations. And, you know, though they could get rabies, any mammal can, it doesn't mean that they have rabies if you see them out during the daytime.
And you've actually said that you know of coyotes eating possibly rabid raccoons or possums and not contracting the disease themselves?
They have a low prevalence of contracting rabies, so we do track data like that. And since 1990 in our state, I believe we only have 15 confirmed cases of rabies in coyotes versus perhaps over 8,000 in raccoons and thousands in foxes and skunks, other animals that are more likely to contract rabies.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about wildlife that lives in the Cape Fear region with two North Carolina wildlife biologists, Chris Kent and John Henry Harrelson. Just a few minutes left if you have a question on this Wednesday. 910-343-1138 is the number. Coastline@whqr.org is the email. Vince writes, I live in a tidal, along a tidal creek, he doesn't live in the creek, along a tidal creek in Leland, which backs up to my yard, Sturgeon Creek. Are my cats more at risk from a coyote, a gator, or something else?
Well, Leland's in my district, so I'll answer that. Your cats are at risk from all those things. A coyote will absolutely eat an outdoor cat. A cat on the water would be prey for an alligator. And cats aren't great for outside anyway. They destroy a lot of songbirds, eat a lot of small mammals. But the caller or the person should be concerned for their cat and should keep them in a leash or keep them in a enclosed area. And the same thing goes for small dogs as well.
Jamie writes, Rachel, there are multiple posts on Nextdoor.com about coyotes, missing cats, etc. Thanks for having these biologists on to explain what's happening in the environment. As more and more habitat is destroyed, Jamie writes, predators and their prey are forced to live cheek by jowl with humans. This sounds idealistic, I know, but I think it's an excellent opportunity for humans to be mindful, to avoid harming animals, and of course to avoid being harmed. Mindfulness and education are so important here. And that's actually one of the reasons that we're having this discussion today, not just the fact that these two wildlife management plans have changed, the alligator and the coyote management plans, but also because there's been so much discussion on social media about this and these different reactions. Chris Kent.
She makes a really good point. And as we've kind of alluded to throughout this discussion, education is where everything needs to start. John Henry and I, we are often called by neighborhood subdivisions that are experiencing issues with coyotes or any type of wildlife situation. And one thing I want to point out is we often go to those subdivisions and, you know, give talks, wildlife talks to, you know, HOA groups, to neighborhood watch groups, things like that. So if you're having any issues in your neighborhood or subdivision where you live, you know, feel free to give us a call and we can come and, you know, provide information for you. We can, you know, visit your property, give you some suggestions on things that you can do around your property to prevent wildlife issues. You know, again, going back to coexistence, you know, we can coexist with wildlife. Sometimes it involves us adjusting our habits around our property a little bit.
Canadian geese, I just want to make sure we get to them before the end of this hour. Are they truly immigrants at this point, or are we talking about first, second generation American geese populations? Chris Kent.
I would say we have two distinct populations of geese. We do still have migratory geese in our state. And, you know, but over the years, geese have shown up in golf course communities, neighborhood subdivisions. And, you know, and again, going back to people feeding wildlife, a lot of times in those situations, people were feeding them. They enjoyed seeing 4 or 6 or 10 geese. And once you start feeding wildlife, it can really affect their migratory habits. It can affect their feeding habits. And now 3 years later, that neighborhood subdivision might have 80 geese, and they're no longer migrating.
Is there a problem with that?
If you love geese, it's not a problem. But if you don't enjoy goose poop all around your property and things like that, then some people might take issue with that.
Is that goose poop good for the grass?
I'm sure it probably is, Rachel. I don't know. I'm not an expert on goose poop. So.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about local wildlife, and we have Broudis, is it, from Bladen County?
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Yeah, I've been hunting depredation, or hunting off Wildlife Resources Commission's depredation permits the last few years, and I generally hunt coyote and mainly deer, but I'm thinking about getting in the coyote. Anyway, my question is, do I need to be wearing blaze orange, like the standard regulations for deer season, when I'm out hunting those animals off depredation permits?
Good question. And we're thinking about this?
Well, yeah.
Chris Kent.
I, even though you're not in my district, that's a good question. I'm really glad that you brought that up. You know, and having worked in the hunter education program, I tell folks blaze orange when you're out in the woods is always a good idea, whether it's hunting season or not. But specifically to answer your question, if you are involved in trapping or hunting during hunting season, then absolutely I would encourage you to have blaze orange on. And a big question I always got was, you know, with people with their own private property, if they're hunting on a farm that they own, your own private property, by law you're not required to wear blaze orange. But, you know, every single one of those people, when I asked them, have always told me, you know, they've had problems with people coming onto their property and poaching or trespassing without permission. So you could be out hunting on your own property not wearing blaze orange and potentially, you know, get shot by somebody that doesn't have permission to be hunting on that property. So I would say just, you know, if you have blaze orange, wear it. It makes you more visible, and the whole reason is to be able to return and hunt another day.
Thank you so much for that question, Broudis. Pete from Rocky Point called and said, I saw a dead armadillo on the side of the road in Sunset Beach. Is that the next critter moving to town? John Henry Harrelson, are we getting armadillos?
We do occasionally have armadillos move up from South Carolina. That would be interesting to know exactly where it is, because those rare species or species that we don't normally encounter, we actually catalog and keep up with those animals, so we can figure out how they're moving across our landscape or how many we're having. So it'd be nice to know where he saw that at in Sunset Beach.
Okay. And Pete, if you want to call back and just let us know, we'll pass that on to our wildlife biologists. What about the fox population? What is that population doing in southeastern North Carolina? Chris Kent.
Well, we do have a lot of specialty biologists with our agency. We've got a fur bear biologist, a black bear biologist, a deer biologist, and a lot of other biologists that specialize in specific animals. And foxes being considered a fur bear animal, you know, Colleen Offenbuttle, she does a lot of fur bear research across the state. Specifically in my district, you know, I would say, you know, we've got a pretty healthy fox population that I have observed. You know, something to keep in mind is how these animals can be affected by wildlife diseases as well. I believe New Hanover County experienced a canine distemper outbreak over the last couple of years. Raccoons were most affected by that. However, gray foxes are often affected as well. And so I would say specifically here in New Hanover County, you know, over the last couple of years, the fox and raccoon population has probably taken a bit of a hit, so people might not be seeing as many of those animals.
Now, animals that are afflicted by distemper, does it cause them to react the same way that rabies does in terms, you know, rabies wants to spread itself, and so a rabid animal will come after you? Is that true with an animal that has distemper?
The symptoms, outward symptoms, are very similar with distemper and rabies, and it's not to say an animal couldn't have both of those at the same time even. You know, the important thing to remember, you know, for an average citizen out there, if you encounter one of these wild animals on your property and it doesn't appear to be acting normal, you know, say it's laying in one spot, it shows no fear of humans, it kind of walking around, stumbling, any kind of behavior like that, you know, don't try to go and help the animal and pick it up and wrap it in a towel and take it inside and nurse it back to health. You want to contact an expert. You want to contact a biologist or wildlife enforcement officer or animal control.
And we have just a minute or so left. Gary says, I've stopped my vehicle many times to help a wandering reptile across the road. Is this the season? Does this continue until winter? John Henry?
There are plenty of turtles and snakes out on the road right now, and we appreciate you breaking for turtles and reptiles. Please don't try to run over them. Don't try to kill them. And if you can safely pull over and move them off the road in the direction they're going, that's great.
But maybe not if it's a rattlesnake. I think there was just a news story. This wasn't local. This was in the western part of the country. But a guy tried to move a rattlesnake off the road and got bitten twice and died.
He should have been smarter about how he moved that snake.
Yeah.
And, of course, we have lots of resources from you two that we will post on our website. That's this edition of Coastline. Chris Kent, John Henry Harrelson, thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caroline DeVries is our webmaster. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org. Get the podcast, find it on the HQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 3. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.